This is Real Talk, the podcast with Devin Wieters, where we talk all things inclusion and have a little bit of fun, too. Remember to leave a 5-star review and enjoy the show.
Hello, hello. Welcome to another episode of Real Talk. My name is Devin Wieters. Today, we have Dr. Steve Yucciavelli on the show. I'm sorry if I didn't pronounce that right. But he is a leadership guru. He does a lot of work around inclusivity in the workplace and in leadership, and he is so much fun. So I am confident that you guys are going to enjoy this conversation as much as I did. Please enjoy Dr. Steve. Hello, hello. Welcome to another episode of Real Talk. My name is Devin Wieters. Today we have Dr. Steve. Say your last name for me, Steve.
Yucciavelli.
Yucciavelli. Wow, that's a last name. On with us today. How are you?
I'm very good. How are you?
Good. First, tell us about yourself, and then we'll go from there.
Great. So hello, Dr. Steve Yucciavelli, pronouns he, him, and his. I am the owner and principal of Top Dog Learning Group. We are a learning development, change management, and diversity and inclusion consulting firm. We're based in Orlando, Florida, but we have Top Doggers, as we like to call them, affiliated both throughout North America as well as beyond. And we focus on things like formal training, face-to-face or virtual, depending on what's happening in the world. we do coaching. I'm a keynote speaker, an author. Lots of fun stuff around usually inclusive leadership is really the main focus we like to play in.
So what got you into diversity and inclusion? And yeah, just tell us how you got into that.
So I actually started playing around in the topic when I worked at Disney. I was an internal leadership consultant. And one of the areas that we talked about through a leadership lens was diversity and inclusion. At least that's what we called it at the time. And so I really just kind of started working with that and staying in the leadership space throughout my career. And then over the past several years, really starting to fold in a bigger focus on consciously inclusive leadership as it relates to the leadership work that I do with my clients and writing books on things to really bring out the concept of inclusion.
So what kind of clients do you usually work with?
Typically we work with large Fortune 500 clients. We work with large not-for-profits as well. Sometimes smaller organizations, but typically speaking, it's usually the larger groups within the Fortune 500.
So what would you say is the most important quality for a diverse leader to have?
I think the best thing that any leader needs to have to be more consciously inclusive is to be a really good ally. So we all are part of our own different demographics, just depending on our makeup and how we identify. But a smart leader is one that can embrace empathy and really be that good ally for whomever needs it.
So what is your biggest success as a business owner in the business, and what's your biggest failure?
I would sadly say my biggest success would be to have survived last year. Quite frankly, one of the main areas that we focus on, of course, is stand-up training. And even though my doctorate is actually in instructional technology and distance education, most of our clients still pre-COVID were embracing stand-up training, face-to-face training kind of stuff. So like I said, we work with larger companies. We typically book for the whole year by about February or so for at least our three biggest clients, because we get all the dates in place, and they advertise them to their internal folks, and then get the hotel rooms or hotel meeting space and all that good stuff. So by last February of 2020, we were booked for the whole year. Well, then of course COVID happened, and all of that revenue, all that projected cash flow went away, and so had to get very creative in how we looked at the world. And you talk about being resilient in times of change, which is literally a topic we teach in our diversity, our leadership programs. So kind of that physician healed myself and really kind of did our own adjusting. And knock on wood, it's been insanely busy now. It kind of came 180, and we're really, really. Matter of fact, my hard stop later today is I'm interviewing a new potential employee. So that's kind of been a good thing.
We don't want to be waiting for that.
No, it's okay. It's okay. And I think one of my biggest failures as a as a business, and this is going to sound really trite, but it kind of hits in, was not to really be as smart about planning for growth as I could have. And I think that's a recommendation I have for anybody who is, you know, either wants to be an entrepreneur, is an entrepreneur, start thinking now about growth. You know, everything from documenting how you do your business processes to how you get clients to all that, you know, process follow-up, document that now, because if you don't and you do, you know, start to grow, it's going to bite you in the butt if you don't do that.
Yes. And how should we go about documenting that? Like Google Docs? I use Google Docs for everything.
That's a great way to do it. You know, sometimes, and that's what I started to do. I've had my business full-time for 13 years, actually. Yeah, our 13th anniversary was just 2 weeks ago. And, you know, I've been using Google Docs, I'll use some Excel stuff. And just whatever works for you to kind of document it, even if it's just like scribbling things on a journal or a notepad or whatever, if you want to go old school, whatever works for you, just to got to get it out there.
Yeah, because I'm bad about documenting things a lot of the times, even though I love Google Docs. And yeah, it's come back to bite me in the butt. How does one become more resilient in times of change?
Ah, beautiful question. So there's a lot of ways. If you Google resilience, you'll find just a great ton of research. And a couple of years ago, we had one of our big pharmaceutical clients came to us and said, you know, hey, we see, you know, this is even pre-COVID, but we see, you know, a lot of our workplace is changing. You know, pharmaceutical, just like so many industries, is very, very nimble, if you will. And so they asked us to create this class. So I, you know, dove real deep into the research and looked at some stuff. And like I said, there's just some great books out there. But what I kind of found out, there's a lot of commonality between these different experts talking about resilience, being resilient in times of change. And really, the three biggest that I see to be resilient, the very first one is, you know, just a positive outlook. And that sounds cheesy. And yes, I'm former Disney and it's not like, oh boy, that kind of stuff. But it's really being able to, you know, you have that really crappy day and you can kind of take that step back and say, wow, that was really a, you know, insert expletive here day. but I'm, you know, trying to keep it good for the kids there.
Yes.
You're welcome. But when you had that really bad day, what was something that went well? And actually studies show that if you document the five things that went well each day, just put them in your phone or, you know, a journal or whatever, you actually will start to rewire your brain to look for positivity, because studies show that over time, as you become more more positive in your view of the world, you actually, one, it's just a better way to live, but two, when things are bad, you can bounce back very quickly from those. So that's kind of the first tip. The second tip would be to really understand the value that you add as a human, and you can interpret value how you will. Sometimes I call it, you know, what are your resources, or what do you bring to the table, or however you want to phrase it. But really honor that and know that when it comes to times of resiliency, we've all been resilient before. You can reflect back maybe 3 years, you pre-COVID, 5 years, whatever. We've had hardships. If you as a human haven't, you're not living, quite frankly. So you reflect on that and say, wow, you know, I bounced back once, I can do it again. And I think the third thing in resiliency, and this is more so from my experience, but it's also in there in some of the research, is to it's okay to just survive some days. And you know, some of us have very different thresholds for change. And so when we're in the throes of it, if sometimes it's that treading water versus like, you know, swimming another 100 laps or whatever, sometimes treading water is totally okay. And I think that's just a good mindset to be in.
That's great. I'm gonna like excerpt that. That's the excerpt from this podcast, because okay. 2020 is treading water.
And that's okay. That's okay.
What's the secret to great leadership, or have you already done that?
So I actually could have taken my 356-page leadership book and boil it down to one word, on one page. Do you want to know the secret? Okay, the secret to leadership is trust. And if you are a smart leader, anything that you do with your team members, and you can insert team as people who report to you, people who are with you on the side, could be your bosses, doesn't matter. If you can instill trust in those folks, you're golden. That's the secret to good leadership.
Tell me about that book, Pride Leadership.
Yes. So Pride Leadership, Strategies for the LGBTQ Plus Leader to be the King or Queen of Their Jungle, just came out. I guess I should say pun intended for that, back in 2019. The audiobook just came out last year. And the focus is on strategies to be a more effective leader through the lens of being an LGBTQ Plus person. So while I've had lots of awesome allies read it, embrace it, they learn from it. I wrote the book through that lens because there really wasn't one. And you know, being a gay man, being the gay leadership dude, which is my unofficial title as well, you know, I've seen a lot of awesome leaders out there, both, you know, gay and straight. But you start to see patterns on what makes leaders more effective, and really understanding how they can go about being more effective in their leadership awesomeness. And I think that's what we need to kind of figure out.
How do you make a workplace more inclusive?
When you think about being a smart leader, it's really thinking about how are we creating a sense of belonging for everyone around us, you know, whether that's part of my demographic or it's you know, just, again, being that awesome ally. What are ways that we can really foster a sense of more inclusivity and a sense of belonging for those around us? It could be big things and small things, you know, big things like, you know, what's the formal training that we're doing, for example, for teaching people to be more inclusive. It could be small things like, what are the images on your website? You know, are when we show a family, are they inclusive of all the different types of families that are out there? Looking at our human resource forms, are they really being inclusive in different ways to present and identify gender versus just the binary male or female? And so those types of things, you can go through your workplace culture and really start to understand how to really shift it so that it is more consciously inclusive.
Now, I don't know where to throw this in, so I'm just going to throw this in here.
Okay, no worries.
Do you watch any like Survivor or Big Brother or those type shows at all?
I used to. I don't watch a whole lot of I'm more of a Netflix kind of streaming guy when I have downtime. So I have but I know the concept of the shows. Yeah, sure.
But I'm sure you heard about the Survivor controversy with all of the assault, you know, things.
I honestly have not. I know there was something on NPR not long ago, but I don't know if it was this particular topic. I just remember there was something about Survivor. So sorry.
Yeah, it was probably that. And they did a great job. They announced all the changes that they were going to make to prevent it from happening again. So this is not like a – and I love Survivor and Jeff Probst. So this is not like a – like, I'm going to – this is not like a, let's, you know, nail probes. But anyway.
Sure.
What can, like, those reality TV shows and entertainment in general do to make sure that they're inclusive and fighting systemic injustice, I would say?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's a big question. I would even kind of broaden it to any workplace and what we could do. And I think it really starts with understanding what is taking place within our respective, you know, workplace culture. So whether that be a TV show or a business or a not-for-profit, and you know, really starting to look at it through a critical lens. And sometimes we can't do that ourselves. So maybe it's bringing in other people to bring a fresh lens or fresh perspective in what's going on, making sure these folks have a diversity lens on them. And you can, of course, apply the many different ways we identify diversity. It's not just race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, gender, physical ability. It's a lot of other things too. And so you start to throw in the layers of intersectionality, and that's really a cool way to start to bring that multifaceted view into our day-to-day practices and really start to dissect them and understand them. Sometimes it is external folks, you know, and this isn't a shameless plug. This is one of the things we do at Top Dog Learning Group is we do go in and because some clients say, look, we're so deep in our own culture, we need someone new to come in. Like, absolutely, we'll come in and take a look and share with you what we see and maybe what we don't see. And I like doing that because it's when clients ask for that, that means that they know there's an opportunity. You know, Disney, we never said there was problems. There was areas of opportunity. And so there's an area of opportunity to really start to think about what are we doing? How are we being inclusive? And if we're not, you know, sometimes we hear about it through punitive reasons. You know, people complain, they give a bad Yelp review, they call that customer service line, whatever. Or we're just smart businesses or workplaces that say, you know what, we do need to do better. And what can we do to not perpetuate systemic racism or injustice or inequity within our own respective workplace and start to kind of play around with those things in an open and honest and respectful manner.
Yeah, that's basically, you know, what the anti-racism petition from former Survivor contestants was asking for. And it included ableism in there too, which
absolutely.
I'm happy to see that, but I am cautiously optimistic on what the show is actually going to do on the ableism front, simply because it's not as, you know, pervasive in our society right now as racism is. Not because, you know, they're bad people over there or anything, but yeah.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I am. So one of my best friends is in a wheelchair, and I've always been very hypersensitive to differing abilities of people, but that one just the inability for even with ADA out there, the inability for certain situations to not be compliant for people of you know, differing needs. And you know, I have two dogs, you know, it's not just Top Dog Learning Group as my business, but hey, I'm a canine parent. And so I walk my two dogs every day. And it just really irks me when I walk past someone's house and they're parked over the sidewalk. Because the first thing I think of is,
oh my God, that is a pet peeve of mine.
Oh, what? It's totally mine. Yeah, and so like, you know, there's an app that I can like take a picture and report it to the city, and I do that all the time because I'm like, you know, I just think of my friend, and I'm like, what if she just wanted to go for you know, some fresh air and roll around the neighborhood for a little bit in her chair? I'm like, she couldn't do that down here, and then she had to go on the road, and that's a safety issue. And so yeah, I think, but that's my ability to think as an advocate, and I think smart leaders can do that for anybody, any of the others that are out there, and really just be that extra voice that sometimes is needed to be heard.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, and my pet peeve is when, you know, in the handicap place, how there's that grid, people will park in it.
And I'm like, I'm like, you can't do that.
You can't do that. That's not for you to park. That's for
Yeah. I value, her name is Meredith. I knew some, but just being with her so often now, like, you know, I didn't know why there's that extra striped line next to the handicap. Well, now I do when I have to move her ramp out so she can get out of the van, you know? And so I've appreciated that understanding. And I encourage any other leader, you know, if you want to be more consciously inclusive, you find those people who do have those differing needs, different opinions, different perspectives, and really start to ask them to experience life through their lens. And it's really going to make you a more inclusive person.
Yeah. So is there anything else that you wanted to add?
You know, one of the big things that, you know, I do in a lot of my keynote speeches and our training classes and stuff is really understand the concept of silent collusion, especially as it relates to creating an environment of inclusivity. And so if you're not familiar with the term silent collusion, it's someone says that disparaging remark and no one refutes it. So I, you know, real quick story. I was in Atlanta, pre-COVID, of course, and we were doing a kind of like a final meeting with a client. So it was myself and one of my top dollars, my consultants with me, and you know, there's about 40 other people from the client side in the room. The very head of the boardroom table is the senior executive in charge of this project, you know, and he's male, and that's just important to the story. So just as we're starting to start the meeting, and it was a more of a like, yay, we're done the project, woohoo kind of meeting. It wasn't really, you know, super serious. But just as the sounds are dying down, you hear the senior executive say at the head of the table, "Well, you know how all women drive." And we all just kind of turned our head and looked at him, but no one said a word at that moment. I was actually about to, and Lori, my top daughter, kicked me on the table. She's like, "Wait." And so we just sat there for what felt like 5 hours, but it wasn't. And you know, and so at that moment, we were all engaging in what's called silent collusion. So, you know, we were tacitly supporting the stupid comment that the senior executive said. And I think one of the things that I really advocate for leaders, if you want to be more inclusive, is to not engage in silent collusion. Matter of fact, if you go to topdoglearning.click/mopsam, M-O-P-S-A-M, you'll get a free learning that we created just because we kept seeing this too much in the workplace. And mopsam is a six-point strategy to help you combat silent collusion in the workplace. And the story is around a Hungarian pulley mop. Do you know what kind of dog that is by chance, Devin?
No. You ever
heard of that? So it's one of those big dogs that looks like it has like white dreadlocks. It's like really, it looks like a mop. And that's why they call it a mop dog.
Oh, yeah. Kind of grayish white.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Exactly. So it looks like if you strapped a stick to its back, you could kind of clean your floors with him. So I jokingly say in this little learning that his name is Sam and he's a pulley mop. So if you take his name and his breed, you know, Sam is his name and mop is a mop dog. If you take those words together and smush them together, that's your six strategies to remember to beat silent collusion. And it's cheeky and silly and funny, but it's a really cool way to think about how you stop that in the workplace, because smart leaders really want to create a sense of belonging for everyone. And you can't do that if there's these disparaging remarks that are said out there and you don't refute them or defend those who are being, you know, remarked. In this case, you know, obviously the senior executive was talking about, you know, women, you know, women drive. Well, clearly that's not true. And so there's six strategies that you can actually do to refute in that moment to not engage in silent collusion.
And let me say, because in today's day and time, Twitter might explode if I don't say this. I have a sense of humor. I like to joke around. I like to, you know, have fun. But there are certain places where you should make certain jokes.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, agreed.
So, last question. What do you think about cancel culture?
I just had this conversation with somebody this weekend. You know, I think there's a big, massive difference between being accountable for what you said and this, you know, concept of cancel culture. And you know, and I'm using bunny ears. I know you can't see me, but cancel culture is absolutely nothing new. You know, it seems that anybody who doesn't like something will try to engage in canceling it, whether it be, you know, the million moms who don't like queer people on TV, to, you know, insert your topic and the people here. And so I think we have to be very careful as a society to not forget that, you know, you can say whatever you want as in a free and open society, but it doesn't mean that you're free from consequences of saying whatever it is that you want. And I think, you know, I mean, gosh, I learned this as a 3-year-old, you know, you be nice to others and they'll be nice to you kind of stuff. And I just get really frustrated when people do think that, you know, they can say whatever they want. Yeah, you can. Absolutely, you can. However, there may be consequences for what you say or what you don't say. And that's just like, hey, suck it up and be an adult. That's kind of how the system works, and own it.
Yeah. Fill in the blank inclusion is?
Smart.
That's one of the most unique answers we've had. I like that answer.
Thank you.
And what gives you hope?
What gives me hope is that, you know, podcasts like this, conversations that are happening within the clients, you know, people are calling us up and saying, hey, we do want to do better. And we do want to talk about the ugly things that maybe we've ignored for way too long. And, you know, we do need to support our Black and Brown brothers and sisters. And we do need to make sure that any type of differing person can have the same access that they need to. And so I get hopeful because I see that becoming more of a thing and more of a norm than it used to be. Even, you know, I've been in this space for 25 plus years and it's still changing and evolving. And that gets me excited and it does give me hope.
So where can people follow you on social media and your website and all that?
Yeah, so the easiest place to kind of find us is topdoglearning.biz, B-I-Z. There you can find all of our Twitter handles, our LinkedIn, all that fun stuff. And you can also kind of check out some of the free stuff that we have out there, some articles in our blog, some free learning, like the one I talk about with the MOPSAM. So lots of cool stuff that you can feel free. We like to give back and try to help folks. So feel free to go to topdoglearning.biz and see what you can use.
And those links will be in the show notes. Thank you so much for coming on today, Steve.
Great. Thank you, Devin. It was great.
And we will see you guys next episode. Bye, guys.
You've been listening to Real Talk the Podcast. Connect with us on Instagram at Real Talk Pod Official, Twitter at Devin Real Talk, and Facebook at Real Talk Podcast Official. If you'd like to support the show, you can do that by using the link in the show notes. Stay tuned for the next episode.